of Lake Effect Now on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for listening. This Sunday morning at 7:30 Milwaukee time, BBC Radio 4 in London will broadcast a documentary called The Lipinski. Produced and presented by Peter Curran, the program tells the dramatic story of MSO concertmaster Frank Allman and the theft and ultimate recovery of the Lipinski Stradivarius violin that he plays.
When Allman was tasered and the instrument stolen from him almost a year ago, it made international headlines. So it shouldn't have been much of a surprise to us that people in the UK were following the story closely. But we were a bit surprised to be contacted by the BBC, who asked if we'd be willing to be interviewed for the documentary.
We agreed with one caveat, that we could interview the interviewer. Peter Curran joins us in the studio now. Peter, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you very much, Bonnie. It's lovely to touch base with the hub of the arts establishment in Milwaukee before I go on my search for the real story of the Lipinski.
So tell me about that, because that's why you're here, over from London. What is it about this story that's captivated British audiences?
I think it's that combination of a very rare instrument, beautiful classical music, but a good old-fashioned crime story, and bringing those things together. They don't really happen that very often, certainly with musical instruments. You know, the art world, there's a fair bit of criminality and forgery and stuff goes on. But I think it's just something because, I guess, a violin and the music that's been written on this instrument over 300 years has really moved people. And the fact that someone was brutally relieved of it, it's a very kind of 21st century collision with the very kind of elite world of Stradivarius violins.
We, of course, were captivated here. I mean, everybody was paying attention to it. People were going to news conferences. We were following it. Were people in Britain also trying to find information? Were they trying to track this as it was happening in real time?
Well, it was an interesting thing. Some of the quality papers were a bit sniffy, like saying, well, of course, in America, they would steal a Stradivarius, whereas in Britain, of course, we'd never stoop to such levels.
We'd never allow that.
No, you know, exactly. You know, the thief would actually be too much of a classical music lover to steal someone's instrument. That sort of nonsense. But in fact, people were really enchanted by the fact that this thing was worth so much money. And a guy was able to walk around with it on his shoulder most of the time, play concerts without the presence of a security guard. And I suppose it was seen as a little emblem of this is modern times, folks. Nothing is sacred now. You know, and I think that's what got people involved in it. And the fact that something that was so historic wasn't in a museum, you know, that was kind of being played, being used every day at concerts in a regular way. I suppose people were slightly horrified that A, it would be stolen, but B, the fact that there weren't a team of security guards around it.
But I think that's true for most classical instruments. People like Yo-Yo Ma play very, very expensive instruments, but I don't know that they do they have security guards? I don't know that they do.
No, but I think, I suppose for a lot of people, they would assume something of such high value. The way that jewellery travels around with a guy in a uniform, you know, standing beside the supermodel who's borrowed it to wear on the catwalk, that sort of thing. People just assumed if they don't know much about the classical music world that, you know, that this is what would happen. And I suppose that's the thing about what made the story a crossover into regular mainstream news was the fact that it was a crime, and it was an extremely lucrative crime if someone was going to get away with it.
Well, and that's the thing, too, of course, is that getting away with it part. One of the things we learned very quickly here was that it's very, very hard to fence an instrument of that value or anything of that value that has a very particular provenance. You know, that it's very, very difficult to find a buyer for something like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we've been here for a couple of days in Milwaukee and talking to various people about the violin, people from the police department, music experts, and they've kind of killed the myth of there being a Mr. Big out there who kind of sits with a white cat on his lap, stroking it, going, I'm going to steal all the world's most fabulous instruments and art and keep them for my private collection. That's the thing. It is such a rare thing for this to happen. I suppose that's the other thing that has piqued people's interest, because there's maybe three or four times in the last 20 or 30 years that an instrument of this value and prominence has been stolen?
I think all but one has been recovered. There was one that was stolen out of a cab in New York City, I think, that has never been traced.
Right.
That's gone to ground. But they think it will come out eventually.
Okay.
But,
I don't reveal too much about the art crime market, Bonnie. People will start asking questions.
That's true. That's
I'd never heard of that, but, I don't know.
I read it somewhere.
Okay.
I read it somewhere. That
sounds
what
good.
Happened.
Well,
So as you prepared to do this from across the pond, I mean, many thousands of miles away, before you actually got here to do your interviews, where did you start?
Well, luckily, I had worked with two American producers, Jim McVeigh and Shelley Ortwine, who'd actually made some film pieces on the Lipinski some years ago before this drama unfolded, and they'd worked on other projects. So I'd read the story about the crime and stuff. Then I got in contact with Jim, and he was happy enough to come along and be the American co-producer of this and pull various strands together.
Who have you talked to so far?
Well, so far we've spoken to the lawyer of Universal Alla, who was the guy who was convicted of buying the taser gun, which was used in the attack on Frank. And he was a very interesting man. His practice is out the back of a magic shop in Madison, and he used to be a magician. He didn't manage to spring his guy, though, sadly, from 3 years in the pen. But he was very interesting just on the whole, the kind of background to the particular case and, I suppose, the personalities involved legally. We've also spent the day with Frank Almond, and he was very, very generous with his time. He took the instrument out, he played it to us, and we revisited the scene of the crime. And it was quite a moving experience, I think.
We were just fascinated to get the call that the people cared that much from that far away about this incident here. I mean, like I said, we were completely wrapped up in it for the time that it was going on, but that makes sense.
Well, I think the thing about this particular instrument and, as you mentioned, the fact that it was so violently taken from the person, the custodian of it, of this kind of rare piece of music art, really got people interested in the history of it. And because you have the sales purchase record of this violin, you can see it's been through the hands of people who have been fleeing dictators, Nazi persecution, entertaining George Gershwin in Cuba. You know, it's been around, this violin.
Yeah.
So I suppose there's a tremendous amount of affection, because even though they mightn't know this particular violin, or they mightn't know Frank Almond or Milwaukee, this is just the latest happy stopping point for a violin that's had an absolutely amazing life. So I think that's what has excited people's interest in it in the UK and indeed further afield around the world.
So you are producing two pieces, right?
Yeah.
You're producing something for the World Service and also for Four?
Yeah, we're doing a one-hour documentary for the World Service, and then for UK broadcast, we're doing a half-hour version for Radio 4. So that's going to be fun, trying to cram 300 years into half an hour.
Yes, it is. And all of the words that are happening either here or elsewhere that you've been recording. How long are you in town?
I'm in town for, it's probably going to a week before we tie everything up. And then there'll be a couple of weeks editing. And you know, that's always the greatest pleasure, to sit in a dark room weeping quietly.
I have to cut this out. I can't fit this anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If only you knew, folks, the diamonds that are scattered around the floor here,
yes.
Unheard.
Well, Peter, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you. I can't wait to hear the finished piece. It's going to be great to hear it from a completely different perspective.
Well, fantastic, Bonnie. And listen, I really appreciate you having me on Lake Effect and agreeing to give me, I believe they call it the skinny on Milwaukee's love with classical music and wider culture.
Peter Curran is the producer and presenter of The Lipinski, a BBC radio documentary. The half-hour Radio 4 version will be broadcast this coming Sunday morning, December 14th at 1:30 London time, 7:30 in the morning Milwaukee time. You can stream it live by going to the Radio 4 website. There's a link to it from WUWM.com. The program will be available on the BBC website for 30 days after the broadcast.
The hour-long BBC World Service version of the program will air on December 27th. We will post details on WUWM.com as soon as we have them. We'll take one last break and then learn about the British brass band tradition and its American counterpart, represented here by the Milwaukee Festival Brass. Stay tuned. Lake Effect returns in a moment on WUWM.